And also, maquillaje is the one of the one words in Spanish that I cannot pronounce ever. Like, I'm just so bad at pronouncing it. And I was like, okay, that's funny. I literally, dude, I'm mentioning Shira again. I turned the FaceTime over to Shira. I was like, Shira, how do you pronounce this word? And it's like maquillaje, makeup. And I was like, I can never pronounce it right. Anyway, very good song, though. If you would like, I recommend checking out Mecano. They're very good. And then the last song in the set was by Hombres G or Hombres G. It was Lawrence de Arabia off their album Hombres G. And it's their 30th anniversary edition. I love Hombres G. Very good band. I've actually been listening to them a lot more recently. And I was like, if both my sets are going to be in Spanish, then we should play them. And so, yeah. Do you guys have anything else to add?
Just bye.
All right.
We're running out of time.
So. Yeah, we'll hand it over to the next show. Are you ready? Okay, awesome. All right. Bye, guys.
Yeah, send it off.
Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts.
Imagine talking on air with underrepresented communities,
reviewing movies,
or even singing live karaoke. In case you're wondering, anyone is eligible.
And as you can tell, the possibilities are endless.
If you're interested, please email us at programming@kdvs.org.
Hello, I'm Micah. This is Book It, and you're listening to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM. We're back in the same time slot. Nothing really changed. And if you don't know what Book It is, we're every other week now. But every other week, we review and talk about a different book. Last quarter, we only talked about and read... I keep saying we, like there's more than one person here. It's just me. Read and talked about mainly books written by women or female authors and like books pertaining to like feminism and stuff like that. Quarter before was kind of just like, or the two quarters before that with my old co-hosts was kind of just like a mixed match of stuff. But this, I don't know, this quarter I couldn't really decide if there was going to be like an overall theme for the books that I was choosing. Like last quarter, because I like when there's like an overall theme. It kind of makes it easier to like choose books for me. But I couldn't decide that. I was going to kind of go and talk about authors and books that are like books by authors that had won Nobel Prizes in literature. Because I thought that would be really interesting. But I don't know. Who knows? It might just be random books that I want to talk about again. But today we're going to be talking about Human Acts by Han Kang. She recently won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 2024. And shout out. So I thought it'd be fitting to start off with her. I also last quarter reviewed The Vegetarian by her, which was honestly one of the greatest books I've ever read. I love that book a lot. I think it's beautiful. And ever since I read that book, I'd been really, really wanting to read Human Acts, because I'd seen that a lot of people have said that it's like her one of her best books, or like her best book of all time. And so I finally found, well, not finally found it, but I found it at a bookstore in SF recently, and I was like, I might as well get it, and I got it. And here we are. We're going to review it and talk about it. I'm also going to do something different today. I'm going to play some clips too, I'm not going to speak the entire time, just because the Gwangju... Well, let me explain, actually. So Human Acts kind of... Oh, we have a... Do you want to say hello? Special guest? Let me turn on the mic. Oh, the mic was not on.
Hi, guys.
Oh, my God.
DJ Kraz here to discuss Human Acts.
It's crazy. Have you ever read this book?
I haven't, but I did a cursory rundown of the surrounding events.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so Human Acts essentially kind of... covers the topic of the Gwangju Uprising. And the Gwangju Uprising was, well, it was an event that happened in South Korea in the 1980s. It's kind of crazy. So DJ Sunday Greg. Me and Kraz did a little rundown.
Wait, did Greg read the book as well? Or no?
No, I don't think so. I don't think DJ Sunday Greg has ever read this book. I ripped my paper that I wrote all this information down, so it's going to be a little... But essentially the Gwangju Uprising happened over 9 days, and so in 1979, beginning of 1980, what is his name, Park something, the dictator at the time, was assassinated, and then Cho Doo-hwan took over instead, and they kind of implemented like martial law, and it was really, really crazy. And after this happened, like, a lot of the universities, like Jongnam University, a lot of students started to like protest against like the new government that was implemented. And obviously, what's his, Cho Doo-hwan, he reacted very badly, and he just like set the military, and they started like attacking and like shooting and like stabbing like students like in the streets. It's really, really crazy. From what I've read, they've also like, it was really brutal. And I don't want to talk about that like completely on air, but it's like really, really crazy. If you'd like, you can look that up yourself. What the military in South Korea, or like, I guess like the figure that South Korea gave out was like 200 people, 250 people died or something, which it's probably not true. I don't think that's true. A lot of foreign statistics
to clarify,
say. A lot of foreign statistics think it's like 2,000 or above, which I believe is closer to the real number. Because from what I've read and like seen from like people who like were actually there during the Gwangju Uprising, they talk about how like they would see like hundreds of dead bodies, and so there's no way it was just like 200 people that died. And another problem is a lot of these people like went missing. So something that Hong Kang like writes about in the book is like how they would like dump bodies into like mass graves and like set them on fire, which is probably what happened to a lot of the missing people, quote unquote. So yeah, I think it's like probably a way higher number than what South Korea says. But you know, South Korea kind of has a history of denying things like this. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I know about this is because apparently Jimmy Carter had some involvement in it.
Okay, yeah, can you elaborate on this? Because I didn't know about this.
I cannot.
Okay, never mind.
We can look it up, but like, yeah, I mean, I just saw that because Jimmy Carter passed away, so it seemed like a lot of praise for him, and then this is one of the main like counterpoints I saw, was that apparently he had a hand in authorizing it, but I don't know what level of American diplomacy influences South Korean politics, but I believe it is a pretty great extent because we're very involved with them economically.
He apparently supported the Korean military's crushing of the Gwangju Uprising in 1980.
Interesting.
So I don't know if he completely like had something to do with it, but he definitely supported it,
yeah,
which is crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird stance to take, bro.
That's a crazy stance to take, I will say. Because I feel like if you read about this and, like, watch videos and stuff, it's, like, it was, like, horrendous.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and so even after the Gwangju Uprising happened, because it only lasted 9 days from the 18th of May, 1980 to the 27th of May, 1980, the after effects of it were really, really crazy. So, like, there was a bunch of, like, censorship that would happen afterwards, which Hong Kang kind of talks about in the book. I feel like I should explain the book a little bit. But essentially, Human Acts by Hong Kang, like I said, talks about the Gwangju Uprising. It takes place during the Gwangju Uprising. And it all starts because Hong Kang, she was born, or like her hometown is Gwangju. Mm. And she moved from Gwangju when she was 9, I think, like 4 months before the uprising happened, to Seoul, because her dad was also an author. And so they moved or whatever. But that was her hometown. And so the book, there's kind of like a central figure of the book. There's not like, how do I explain this? The book kind of goes in like a timeline. So it jumps from like 1980 to like 1990 to like 2002, like that. So every chapter is kind of like, you go forward in time. And it kind of focuses on a different character or person in each like chapter. But they're all like kind of intertwined and related in some way. And so there's one character that kind of like brings them all together, and it's this 15-year-old boy named Dong Ho. And so Dong Ho was a real person, and he lived, he was a part of the family that bought the house that Hong Kang used to live in, before she moved to, or after she moved to Seoul, so her like childhood home. And he died during the Gwangju Uprising. And so the book kind of starts like with him and ends with him, and he's kind of like the main person that's talked about throughout the book. And so we start off, and it's Dong Ho, he's still alive, and it's like, also the book is kind of written in an interesting way where the characters will use the second like person, which is like rarely, I feel like rarely seen in books. So they will often say you, or like refer to themselves as you. It's really interesting. But anyways, the book starts off with Dong Ho, and it's like the,
like, in a, you never think something like this would happen to you, like, is a sentence like that?
No, it's like, or like it's as if like themselves? They're talking as if you like, you the reader are the person.
Oh,
but also like sometimes they refer to themselves. Yeah, it's like kind of weird.
Yeah,
but it's not like super confusing. I feel like I'm just explaining it in a weird way.
No, I think
But yeah, anyways, so it starts off with Dong Ho, and it starts like, this is already happening, or, oh my gosh, my mind is like,
You're good, bro. You're doing great.
Thank you. Usually I have like I have things written down, so it's a lot easier, but not today. Anyways, it starts off in the middle of like the Gwangju Uprising, oh, there goes our background music.
No. Yeah, I can do it.
Thank you. Why did it? Okay, it doesn't matter. Oh, there it goes. Dong Ho is alive at this point. And we, like, learn that he's, like, helping, find bodies. And he's helping to, like, clean them. And then what they do is they tag them. So they'll, like, help to get them identified. And they'll write down their name and, like, information, stuff like that. And they're keeping them in, like, a gymnasium, like, at one of the schools, I guess, nearby. And so Dong Ho, he's 15. And this is, like, what he's doing to, like, help out or whatever. And his family doesn't really want him to help out. We also find out about his brother, who we later learned has been killed. Mm-hmm. And he watched him, like, be shot and, like, die. His name is Jongdae, I believe. And we also find out about his friend named Jongmi. And I think Jongdae and Jongmi are friends. And they're, like, all of these characters that are being talked about right now end up dying or are dead.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, the book is really, really sad. So this part of the book, Dong Ho goes on to talk about how, like, his family's looking for his brother. And the thing is, he knows that his brother is dead because he watched him die, but his family doesn't, and he doesn't want to tell them. He hasn't told them.
Yeah.
And so his mother's looking for his brother or his brother and his friend, but they don't know where they're at, but they're dead, we find out.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And then I think it jumps forward to 1980. Let me see. I have this written down. 1985. And so we jump forward to 1985, and in this chapter, she focuses on an editor who we don't know the name of, I believe. And the editor is, like, trying to get a book that's, like, written about the Gwangju Uprising through censorship. And so they just kind of talk about how, like, she sends out this book to the people to, like, review whatever, and then it comes back, and, like, a majority of it is just, like, deleted or, like, crossed out, and they're not allowed to, like, put it out there. And so that's just, like, yeah. And it also talks about, like, how, like, there's, like, military occupation in Gwangju, because she, like, tries to leave, like, the place where she sent off the manuscript, and they, like, question her, like, where she's going, what she's doing, things like that. And so we kind of see, like, how this had, like, a after effect.
So there was a military occupation in the city for, like, a while after the actual
uprising
had happened?
Yeah, because after the Gwangju Uprising, they were still, like, in a kind of, like, sort of dictatorship. It was, like, really...
Just in the one city.
Not just in the city, but, like, in general.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gwangju was probably, like, where, like, a lot of stuff was going on, you know what I mean? Because that's, like, where the uprising happened. It was just, like, a crazy place to be.
Yeah. Does the book provide context as to why it got so heated there out of any place, or is it just kind of...
No.
Yeah.
The book kind of starts off as if, like, you kind of know about the Gwangju uprising, which, to be fair, if you're a Korean, you probably know about the Gwangju uprising.
Yeah.
But if you're not, I would recommend reading up about it if you'd like before you read the book. So thankfully, I was reading about the Gwangju Uprising before I read it, so I kind of already knew what was going on. But yeah, there's kind of like, there's some context like provided, but it's not like an overview or like a timeline of what's going on. So you kind of have to know that yourself. And so after we like visit the editor for a little bit, it jumps to 1990. And in 1990, this chapter focuses on a prisoner who's trying to be, or who they're trying to persuade to like basically write down their account of what happened to them when they were like imprisoned, because something that happened, or like another point of the book is how do I explain this? Oh, we're running out of time. Oh my gosh. Some of these characters know Dong-ho or were with Dong-ho when this was happening, and also were in like the gym helping out to like tag the bodies and stuff like that. So like the editor, I forgot her name, but she was there. She knows Dong-ho. And I believe the prisoner also knew Dong-ho too, because she recounts, the night that she was imprisoned. And I believe this is the night that Dong-ho was killed as well. It's like really, really sad. When I read the book, I was crying and it was really, really sad. But yeah, so part of the book, or like, I guess like in this chapter, she also kind of like, we'll go back in time and like recount like the character's memories of what happened. So this character, I believe, something that the students did is they armed themselves with guns. And a problem was a lot of them were young children. So some of them like were 15 or 14. They talk about how one of the characters was in middle school, which is like super, super young. And then some of them were like early 20s, and none of them knew how to shoot guns and stuff like that. She talks about how like they had these guns and they were trying to protect themselves, and they hid out in like a hospital, and in the end they never shot a single bullet. And they ended up like being taken out, and like she talks about how like the main character of like this chapter, and there's another, I keep forgetting his name, but there's like a main guy that's not Dong-ho, who was kind of like a ringleader, who kind of like organized a lot of the stuff. The two of them had instructed a lot of the students to basically come out of the hospital and like surrender, because they just thought it wouldn't be right for them to risk their lives anymore.
Did they just get killed anyway?
Yeah. So yeah. Her and the other guy, they are taken out, and they don't die. They live, but they have the like military has them like face and watch as like the kids walk out, and they're Whoa. Surrendering, and as they walk out they like shoot and kill all of them, and it's really crazy. And then they take those two to jail, and so she talks about how like she's in jail, and they also talk about like the things that they did to her while she was in jail, and other women that were taken to jail. So it's like really, really sad. So I don't know. Yeah, and then it jumps forward to 2002, this one focuses on a factory girl who also knew the people who were working in the gym and, like, tagging the bodies and stuff like that, and it kind of just explains how she got involved with, like, the movement and how she like ended up where she was, and also talks about how like her life like went after the Gwangju uprising and how she like essentially was like blacklisted from everywhere and she couldn't find a job anywhere because she participated in like the uprising and stuff like that, and also talks about how like her relationship with this other woman who ended up becoming a lot more famous than her, who also was a part of like the people in the gym. So it's all kind of focuses on people from that gym that were helping tagging the bodies. And if she talks about how like their relationship kind of like dwindled, and how she was like kind of jealous of her and stuff like that. And it also like I said, recounts her memories from what happened. Yeah. And then the ending of the book jumps, and it's Hong Kang's like perspective. And it's basically like, I skipped one. Sorry. From 2002, it goes to 2010. And that's when we meet Dong-ho's mother. And it focuses on how she's, like, navigating her grief and how she, like, ends up, like... Because in the beginning, like, after her son died, she wanted to seek justice or whatever. But she wasn't, like, being, like, super vocal about it. She kind of just, like, accepted what happened. And then it explains, like, how, like, one day she kind of just, like, snapped. And she, like, started going to, like, protests. And she was, like, getting arrested and stuff like this to try to, like, seek justice for her son. Because at this point, I don't... Like, they don't even know where his body is. Like, they know that he died, but they don't, like, know what happened to his body or anything like that. Because, like I said in the beginning, a lot of people's bodies were, like, either, like, buried in mass graves or, like, burned. And so we follow her journey or whatever, and, like, she's, like, obviously, like, going through a lot, but she's still, like, fighting for her son, and she's meeting up with, like, other, like, family members or people who had family that died in the uprising. Yeah, and then we skip forward to Hong Kang's perspective, and this is kind of, like, the ending of the book. And she basically, it's basically, like, her, like, trying to, like, understand, like, what happened and her, like, learning about Dong-ho and getting permission from, like, his family, because we find out that Dong-ho's mother has died. And so she meets up with his older brother, who's, like, grown and, you know, has a family and stuff like that now. And so she meets up with his brother and she gets permission from them to, like, write about Dong-ho. And it's really interesting. And then she ends the book and it's just, like, her, like, deciding what she's gonna do, and that's like the end of the book. I didn't describe like everything that happens in the book just because I feel like I don't want to.
That's not. It's just it's bad etiquette to.
Yeah. I feel like this book is amazing to read.
Yeah.
While like not knowing the entirety of it, I don't know. I think it was an amazing book. Like I said, it made me cry a lot. DJ Sunday Greg. Yeah, it made me cry a lot. It was very beautiful, but yeah, super heavy like subject matter. So if you are into like crying or like I don't know, I guess like a trigger warning, because it talks about a lot of crazy stuff, and it kind of goes into like graphic detail. Yeah, if you know you're not with that, I wouldn't recommend checking it out. But other than that, I think the book was amazing. I think it talks about like. Something that I feel like a lot of people don't know about, because like before I read about Hong Kang, like I didn't really know that happened. Like I didn't know anything about the Gwangju uprising. I didn't know what was happening in South Korea in like 1980. So I think it's good for that. Also, I see why she won her Nobel Prize. Like she's an amazing author, even in translation. Like I'm reading this in English, not in her native Korean. I think it was amazing. So in my brain, I think I would give it a 10 out of 10. I think it's one of the greatest books I've ever read. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Very beautiful. Yeah. Highly recommend checking it out, DJ Kraz.
I might just, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you can borrow this one. It's...
Yeah, I don't mind if it's marked up or anything.
No, I didn't... I generally write and, like, tab, like, all of my books, but I read this, like, within a couple days, like, and I just, like, didn't do it. I just, like, kept reading it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was too focused on reading it.
I don't know if I feel like being sad right now. Uh-huh. But, yeah. I literally did not know that this happened until last week, bro. It's
yeah.
Interesting. I mean, maybe it's just getting... How did you... Did you encounter the book independently of knowing about the uprising, or...?
So, what happened was I have been wanting to read The Vegetarian by Hong Kang for a long time. Like, it was on my to-read for, like, since, like, 2020.
Yeah.
I just never got around to reading it. And then she won the Nobel Prize in Literature, and I was like, I got to read the book finally, yeah. You know? And so I read the book and I talked about, it's called The Vegetarian. I read it and talked about it on Book It last quarter. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, before I read that book, I talked about the Gwangju Uprising during that episode too, because Hong King talks about how the Gwangju Uprising really affected like her writing in general and everything that she's put out. So I was like, oh, I should probably know about this. And so that's how I knew about the Gwangju Uprising. And then I read more about Hong King, and a lot of people said like this was like one of her greatest books, and it focused on the Gwangju Uprising. And so that's why I was like, I gotta read this book. Yeah. And then I read it.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Hong King. Goat.
Yeah.
Deserved that Nobel Prize.
Are most of her novels to do with South Korean politics and happenings, or are they not all
Not really.
Yeah.
This one mainly, but like The Vegetarian kind of focuses more on like, how do I explain this? I feel like The Vegetarian is more like, it's not, there's like really no politics. It's not really based on politics. It's more like a commentary on like South Korean like society,
on like the culture,
yeah,
sure.
And culture.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like this one is definitely way more political, obviously. Yeah. Oh, DJ Sunday Greg left. Oh my god. But yeah, so, I haven't read all of her books, so
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, South Korean politics are like, I'm not an authority on it or whatever. I, in fact, know very little, but like, the more I learn, the more I'm just like,
it's a little crazy over there.
Yeah, it just seems like kind of authoritarian, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I don't even know if authoritarianism is something that you can like approach on a gradient. Like, oh, they're low-key dictatorship, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think South Korean politics and culture is really like a crazy just like topic to even get into. Like, there's just I feel like there's always something going on. They're extremely conservative, like it's just like it's really crazy. I don't know. I got really into like Korean dramas when I was like in middle school, and so like I kind of just like started reading a lot about like obviously like the politics and culture that was going on or whatever, and it's just like it's crazy. It's completely like different. Like you said, kind of authoritarian, like like recently they had a whole thing where some like the president tried to coup, and then they impeached him, like it was crazy. Yeah. And then like they had like people like members of like their parliament like fighting people. It was crazy. That's what I'm saying, there's always something going on in South Korea politics. I don't know. But yeah, I think I'm gonna end the show with a little clip. It's just talking about Hong Kang and her winning the Nobel Prize and the Gwangju Uprising. Nice. But yeah, I don't know. I'll be back in 2 weeks, I guess. Don't know what book I'm going to be talking about. This is like the one quarter did not plan out all my books. Yeah. But actually, I think I'm going to be reading A Personal Matter by Kenzuro Obe. That is another book that kind of has a lot of commentary on like Japanese culture and society, and deals with like disability and stuff like that. So that might be the book. Who knows?
Cool.
Stay tuned for that if you'd
locked in for that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Author has stirred up a lot of excitement after taking home the Nobel Prize in Literature. Her win is also attracting some criticism, though, over how she addresses a major historical event in her writing. NHK World's Kim Chan-ju explains.
The Nobel Prize in Literature for 2024 is awarded to South Korean author Han Kang.
An unexpected honor, marking the first time someone from the country has won in the category, and the South's second prize overall. The Academy praised Han for what it described as her intense poetic prose that confronts historical traumas and exposes the fragility of human life.
Despite our different historical backgrounds, I believe that anyone can understand my works because we share something in common as human beings.
Human Acts is one of our most well-known works. It focuses on the victims and survivors of pro-democracy demonstrations in May 1980, known as the Gwangju Uprising. The protests were directed against a military-led government that had taken power in a coup. Authorities forcibly cracked down, killing more than 160 civilians. The uprising is regarded as a key step toward the country's democratization. Some far-right groups have protested in response to Han's win.
Her works are socialistic and left-leaning. They praise communists and the riots by North Korean supporters.
They say the North's forces provoked citizens to use violence against legitimate public authorities. The claim has been widely debunked. In Gwangju, many are celebrating Han's win. In fact, the city has opened a book cafe where people can read her work.
Look out now, this is the Diz. Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out! Ow! This is the Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. I think it's time for a little theme music, don't you? Thank you, John Scofield. This song is A Go-Go by John Scofield. The Scofield Estate. I don't know if it's right to call it an estate because John Scofield is still with us. Has given me permanent permission to use this particular song as the theme song of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Why? Because John Scofield and company, they understand that this is a radio show itself about creativity. It's about different means of representing, especially local events that are cultural, poetic, musical, sometimes literary, sometimes lyrical, always intriguing. For instance, today on the radio show, we'll hear first from Ariella Gitlin. She has a new essay about embarrassment of all topics in the New York Times last week as part of their letters of recommendation. Ariel Gitlin is a poet and marketing and creative strategist working out of Brooklyn, New York. We're going to talk about poetry and technology with Ariella. Our second guest will be right here in the studio, and that is Dan Kehew. Dan Kehew is the originator of Stories on Fire. It's a new storytelling event right here in the city of Davis. And we're going to be talking to Dan about that and perhaps about bicycle technology. And then finally, towards the end of the hour, we'll hear from Susie Meserve. She's been on the program before. She's a poet, educator, and creative coach who grew up outside of Boston and was educated at Tufts University as well as University of Massachusetts at Amherst. She's got a writing class that starts this evening. And if you're interested, you'd be able to participate. Why? Because 2025, ladies and gentlemen. So stick around for all of these guests, one of them here in the studio. We'll be back in a moment with Ariella Gitlin on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Be right back. Thank you.